Welcome to Designing for the Greater Good, a health and safety in design podcast series developed and presented by the Canterbury Safety Charter and the Professional Services Working Group. My name is Paul Duggan, and I will be leading you through a series of interviews with leading professionals in the industry answering the following questions. What is health and safety by design? How can it be used? What are the costs and the benefits? And why have you not heard about it? Tune in to find out, is good design designing for the greater good? Today I'm here with Ian McKenzie, and the theme of this episode is really about one man's health and safety by design journey. And Ian's going to share a little bit about that journey with us. So, Ian, first off, please introduce yourself and what your role is.
I'm a project management consultant. I have a small business, so most of the project management is in the construction industry these days, either demolition, removing buildings, but or building them.
So, tell me, what does health and safety mean to you personally?
Getting home safe, really. I like the outdoors. I get out in the outdoors, kayaking and climbing, etc. And I like to come home safe. There's a bit of risk associated with what I do. So, in the workplace, I like to sort of transfer that risk assessment and health and safety into everyone coming home safely. So in the construction industry, people leaving the worksite safe, getting home to their families.
So what are the learnings that you can take from your outdoor activity and bring to a construction site, do you think?
Well, I think considering risk, there's risk associated with everything. Probably I take more risk in the outdoors than I would expect people to take in the workplace. But I can learn from the outdoors, I can learn from the sort of natural instincts, etc. And transferring that to the workplace, take a different approach, probably a more moderate approach, and look ahead and try and foresee anything that is going to put anyone's health and safety at risk and deal with it, moderate it.
So I guess you're saying that you see health and safety more as a state of mind than a book of regulations.
Yes, both are needed, but a checklist on its own, you know, ticking it off, you can always miss something off it, whereas if you're thinking the right way, then you'll probably take a more comprehensive approach and perhaps avoid things that you might miss just using a checklist.
You said that you tend to maybe take more risks in the outdoors, and you can imagine up a mountain could be quite a risky environment. Does that necessarily mean that is riskier?
It probably means that I take assessment of risk a more deliberate and comprehensive approach to it because it's my life that's on the edge.
So you ramp up your risk assessment and your mitigation in proportion to the risk that you see out there.
Yeah, and my preparedness for it. So I'm not taking a risk unprepared.
Uh-huh.
I've got equipment,
yes,
et cetera. And in the workplace, you know, there are tools like health and safety by design. You know, there are tools that we can use to mitigate risk, to understand it, predict it.
Yep. And what's your understanding of the design process? How do you see that?
Taking a concept, and in my case as a consultant, delivering something for the client, so getting it adequately described, properly documented, so that it can then be translated into physical construction. Mm-hmm. So whether that's a park or an open space or a building, you know, the design process prepares a contract for delivery and describes well what's wanted.
So basically you start with the end product, what the client wants, and then you work on a process to deliver that on time and on budget, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely, and refine it along the way because the client doesn't always know exactly what they want or how to achieve it at the start. So it's an iterative process, but an exciting process, actually, from my point of view.
And how do the two marry together? How do you see health and safety and design joining up at the coalface?
Well, we want to produce that thing that the client wants without any harm to anyone. So working through a process to make sure that we properly describe and can translate into contracts if that's necessary and then produce an end result, but doing all of those things safely so then it can be the end product can be operated and, you know, ultimately removed safely. Mm-hmm. That's how the two sort of interact. We need to be thinking safety all the way along while we are evolving a design.
Now, I spoke a bit at the start about this as being a journey for you, and you're going to talk about a project you've been involved in since 2014, and up until that stage, you were relatively unaware of health and safety by design as a process.
Yes, I didn't, way back when we started and we all submitted fees and started on this very interesting journey with a hospital-based earthquake rebuild and expansion. None of us put in with our fees proposals a comprehensive health and safety by design process, so it hasn't been used. It doesn't mean we haven't done things sensibly and carefully along the way, but a process that I would now understand as a separately properly controlled process wasn't used. So what I've learned is the improvements that we could have made along the way and would make with future projects and using a separate overarching process.
So how did you use health and safety and design as this project progressed then?
Well, one of the really great things about the project, it's been very collaborative right from the involvement of the management team from the hospital through contractor and consultants we've met on a regular basis. So we've come to understand the needs and both the construction needs and the sort of end user hospital needs very, very, very well. So that degree of collaboration has meant that we can talk about health and safety, the parts of it as we've sort of progressed along the fortnightly meeting process, and whether that's handing some of the responsibility to the contractor for the health and safety processes of construction and audit, or actually defining how they're going to manage this building in the long term, and getting the access points in the right place, or the roof safety systems sorted out, all those things we've evolved through the discussion and a sort of intimate understanding of the building.
Who do you feel should be the main drivers of this process? Should it be the client? Should it be the designer? Should it be the people constructing and using it? Who do you see as the ones that really need to give it the biggest push?
Well, interestingly, to get it started, it possibly needs to be the client, or at least the initial consultants who know that the process exists and can prompt the client to ask for that in the proposals. It's too late in a process when you've got all your consultants engaged and a design underway to say, oh, look, here's another process that we should be using. Mm-hmm. Well, never too late, but it's difficult because you've got a fee budget, it's been approved, everyone's sort of moving along the track. And then to say, oh, just wait, we just want to add something else in. It's difficult. If you get all that nailed at the start, if the client knows what to ask, knows the questions to ask, and all the submissions are made on the basis of doing the right thing, mm-hmm. health and safety by design is a separate process, for instance, then it's more likely to be picked up and operated the way it's intended.
As part of that process, do you have to make an economic case to the client? Well, I guess you are adding some costs at your end, but are you able to convince them of the economic benefits once the project is done? Is that part of your job?
I think it's part of the job of the consultant team at the start. Now, as a project manager, if I'm involved early in a project, I can help with that. Mm-hmm. Often I'm not. Sort of come on later. So maybe it's an architect or one of the other consultants who's the first sort of off the block in terms of liaising with the client. So they're the ones really that need to raise this and promote it, describe it, and then get it incorporated in the rest of the briefs to the consultant team.
How well known and understood is this process out in the marketplace at the moment? Is it still in its infancy, and do you see it gaining more traction?
I think it's still in its infancy, absolutely gaining more traction. I think the recent work that I've done with the Safety Charter Professional Services Group has opened minds and raised awareness. I mean, that's why we're talking about it, really, to raise awareness. And therefore, it can sort of filter out and hopefully get embedded in those early stages of, of briefs and engagement of consultants. But yeah, early days, because it's not used in every project by every consultant.
Ian, returning to the hospital project, what were the specific health and safety concerns that you were addressing?
So there were four areas that spring to mind for me. Demolition, and that's around removal of asbestos to some extent, the construction process itself, roof safety, because these are multi-storey buildings, and radiation safety, because this is a hospital with cancer care as part of one of its deliveries. So they're all rather different in their safety requirements.
Yeah, so radiation, I mean, that's not something you would come across every day as a risk out in a workplace. And what? How did you mitigate that risk?
The early design stages, of course, thick walls, concrete and lead. So, you know, very thick concrete walls for this, for the area that houses the radiation treatment equipment. But then later on in the project, we also had to assess radiation because there was work going to be done on the roof, and you know whether or not it was safe for staff to get on the roof and to do more work on different plant on the roof of this building with its, you know, radiation emissions needed to be assessed again. And that can all be done by the right sort of equipment to assess the radiation output in any specific place.
So do you personally, what do you perceive as the value of the health and safety by design process?
To make sure that it's that all the safety aspects have been considered. Through this hospital project, we did everything right, probably, but we haven't run a comprehensive check over it to make sure that we did absolutely everything right. So that is the value of a, you know, separate or a documented comprehensive process, that you make sure you haven't missed anything, make sure you do things in the right order so you're not discovering something late in the piece. Oh, what a shame. We should have thought of that earlier, and then it would have been, you know, cheaper and more effective, or maybe now it's impossible because we've left it too late and we've missed that health and safety benefit that we could have gained by having a proper thorough checking process right from the very start.
So if you had a magic wand you could wave across the industry, what would be your wishes?
I think that the designers pick up right from the start the benefits, talk to them, talk to the clients about those benefits of running a health and safety by design process right through the project, and get that really discussed, developed and embedded at the start. That doesn't mean tacking on a great big, you know, bureaucratic, costly process. What it means is examining it at the start, just like you would other project risks, you know, finance, resource consents. I mean, all those things are considered, they're really big factors that influence a building. So the health and safety by design considerations should be discussed at that early stage, embedded and then operated, you know, without any sort of, you know, agony or difficulty through a project to end up with a better result.
So is this basically an economic argument, or is it a social argument about keeping people safe?
Well, I think it's both. The social argument is keeping people and the environment safe. So we end up with a safer output building when it's pulled down, a safer environment. We end up with a safer environment clearing the site to put up a new building. So the environmental considerations are important. The personal safety and societal safety is equally important. But all those things have an economic benefit, particularly doing them right at the start, doing them comprehensively and not thinking, oh, this is a tack on, this is an extra cost to a project or for society to consider these safety concerns. I mean, if we injure a person, there's an economic and societal cost. So I think they're meshed together, sort of almost inseparable.
So you really can make a legacy argument, can't you, for health and safety by design as a process, and saying, you know, doing it this way, you are going to leave a legacy for future generations in dealing with what you are building now.
Yeah, or not leave an unfortunate legacy with, you know, contamination in the ground from the deconstruction of ultimate deconstruction of a building because it didn't give the long-term considerations, you know, enough time, and you've put polystyrene under a foundation, covered it in concrete, and then when you break up the floor, you've got to dump contaminated material rather than a nice, clean, hard fill, you know, in the Littleton Harbour Reclamation, for instance. So, yeah, the legacy can be a good, safe, clean legacy rather than the opposite, which, you know, gee, we've experienced some of that. Stockpiles of stuff that we wished hadn't been treated the way it was treated.
So in terms of your, I guess, personal and professional journey, what has this process meant to you, you know, in those two regards?
It's quite exciting to be part of discovering a process that can achieve so much. So it expanded my horizons in getting better systems and embedded early so that we can get to the results that also interest me, the improved environmental results, the improved personal safety things. So, discovering a process that is already there, sort of putting wheels on it, promoting it, getting out to people, yes, it's sort of very positive and interesting to me.
Well, in terms of job satisfaction or, professional satisfaction, it doesn't get any better than that, does it?
No, but seeing it not done, of course, can be frustrating as well. So, it's a combination of sort of sitting on the, trying to stifle some of the frustration at times when perhaps things aren't being picked up the way they ought to, but then also, seeing the potential and hoping we turn the lights on the next project.
I guess you being here now and willing to talk about that, hopefully somebody will hear this and think, well, that's something that I'd like to get on board with as well. And I think any position you're in where you can inspire others to do something good is a great position to be in. So hopefully you get that feeling out of what you're doing now.
Yeah, I do, and I'm in an interesting position involved in projects where hopefully I can try and influence. I can take my sort of consultancy and try and influence at the start to get things done, improved, done better.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Ian. It's been great chatting to you, and all the best with your journey going forward.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Designing for the Greater Good, a health and safety in design podcast developed and presented by the Canterbury Safety Charter and the Professional Services Working Group. This is Paul Duggan signing off. Tune in again next time as we answer the question, is good design designing for the greater good?